Hello, everybody. You're joining me, Ryan Seaman, from the show Ryan Seaman and Friends. I'm also in the band I Don't Know How, But They Found Me. And wow, I can't believe that we're almost at the end of the year by the time this airs. I have a good friend. I haven't seen him in a long time just because of COVID, but we've been in each other's lives, I think, since, what, 2007? Is that right?
I was trying to think about that earlier today.
Yeah.
Is it 2007?
I think it was. Now I'll tell you where I remember. But
I bet it's the same. What, did it involve bicycles and a cymbal?
Yes, it did. Yeah. So crazy. That whole day was really nuts. But I have tour director Chris Paulus with us, and we're going to talk about what that all means. But Chris, how are you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I'm living. I'm surviving.
Everything.
You know, it's the ups and downs of, like, trying to figure out if we're going back on tour. We are going back on, or yeah. Some of my bands are going back on tour, and then, like, but then that you book the tour, then you rebook the tour, and
you've been doing that for a year and a half.
We did that for the Midnight. We have been doing that since the last record came out.
Oh my
and
god!
Now we have some shows at the end of September. I don't know when this is going to be on the internet.
This will probably be October-ish.
October? Okay,
yeah,
great.
October, November, something like that.
Yeah, great. Okay, yeah. So we have shows we have a whole tour in November that's like our first tour since the last record. And then we did a EP for Amazon in between that. And it'll be like the new show, new band. Or bigger, same band, but bigger band, more people.
Yeah, so I want to, so the reason why I do this podcast is because in my life, so many people have been coming in and out of my life as far as music goes, you know, and I like to bring on people that have, you know, been in my history, been in my life for like almost the entire time I've been doing music. And you're one of those people, man. I mean, first time I ever met you, I remember I went on the Matches tour bus. And I was playing with this band, I Am Ghost.
That's
and
right.
We were at the Hawthorne Theater in Portland, just to give everybody an idea. So I go on the bus and I'm freaking out because I like cracked the cymbal. And nowadays it doesn't really matter. It kind of does, but whatever. So I go on the bus and I'm like, oh my God, does anybody have any friends in Portland that can help me, you know, get to a music shop? And this man right here sitting across from me.
I'll take you to a music shop, dude. Whatever. What's up, bro?
Yeah. And then we literally just met just because of that. So it was because of the Matches. So you came out to the show. We hung out. We had a great time. And then for years to come, some of my bands would like come through Portland and sleep on your couch or floor.
Yeah. You spent many nights asleep on my floor at 15th and Belmont in Portland.
Yeah. I just remember waking up to a bunch of pugs in my face licking me, and you just kind of hovered over. You're like, oh yeah, this is the life.
This is how we do it in Portland.
Yeah. So, you know, I feel like a lot of people have similar stories of like how they became to be in music, or how they became to be in their small business, or their actors, or, you know, authors or writers. I've had all sorts of people on my show, but with you, I wanted to know, like, how did you get involved with just being in music? And because you have a really interesting story, because I know you not only as like a manager, but I know you as like a musician. I know you as just kind of a tour manager, a tour director, which is like nuts. You know, you've tour managed DJs. You manage the Midnight right now, which is like, that's like a really awesome band.
I tour direct the Midnight.
Okay, the tour director. So, well, in my eyes, it's all managing.
It is. Justin Little, he does all the heavy lifting on the management side. Okay, but I do all the tour directing.
But the tour directing, that's a really important job. I feel like that's probably the most important, because the rest of the stuff is like just, you know, fake email jobs all day long. But then
some of it is. It's interesting. Well, yeah. I mean, sure. So
it's true, right?
You're not wrong,
right?
But with those guys, that's a unique case because, you know, and we can get back to how I got my start and how I know the Matches.
Yeah, yeah. I want to know, like, how did you get from, like, being Chris Paulus, like, and, like, you know, as a child to going into the, I just want to know, like, your story, you know?
Well, I was born a poor white child in Estacada, Oregon.
Yep. Okay.
How do I say it? Like, I mean, I came from pretty humble means in rural Oregon.
Yeah.
And my grandparents were country musicians.
Okay.
And so they would, I don't even think you know this. I'll tell you, this is great.
This is why I have you on here.
Oh my gosh. We're learning so much. We're bonding. Yeah. Let's hold hands.
Yes.
So my grandparents were country musicians.
Okay.
And so they, but had day jobs. So my grandpa ran a heavy machinery for like a construction company during the day. And my grandma was the local school bus dispatcher.
Okay.
In the super small town I'm from. But on the weekends, they had like a country music covers band that would go to like Elks Lodges and Moose Lodges and do like 3 2-hour sets of like country standards of like Merle Haggard songs and stuff and Buck Owens songs.
Uh-huh.
And so when I was 13, you know, I was starting to like figure out that I liked music and
sure.
My grandpa played guitar. I was like, I want to learn how to play the guitar. Mm-hmm. And so he gave me a classical acoustic guitar with nylon strings, which is really hard for a little kid to play.
Sure.
And taught me how to play guitar on that. And then I just like,
yeah, small fingers,
small, very wee fingers.
Right.
And then one time one of his friends was over and was like, do you know what a bar chord is? And I was like, no. And showed me a bar chord. And I was like, so I can just do that anywhere. He's like, yeah. I was like, off to the races. Boom.
Oh, man.
Making punk songs.
Yep.
Like in a bunch of bands doing that stuff. And I just kind of got the itch for it. And then, you know, I ended up, one of my jobs in high school, when I was in college, I worked at like this call center that was like sell people 1-800 numbers. Like,
okay.
Horrible telemarketing job.
I've done those before.
Oh yeah.
I worked for Allstate when I was like 20 and yeah. I moved out to Los Angeles. This is one of my first jobs.
Oh yeah. It's just so
soul crushing.
Soul crushing. Yeah. The worst. Mm-hmm. But I ended up sitting next to this dude, Alex Steininger, who at the time had this was early internet zine days. So he had an internet zine and I was like, I like music. He's like, do you want to go and review shows and interview bands? And you can just go to the shows for free at like La Luna in Portland, which is like the club I grew up going to. And I was like,
okay.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That must've been like after my time or before my time.
Way before your time.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Cause I'm 42. What are you? 22?
By the time this airs, I'm going to be 38.
Yes,
that's
yeah,
a real age.
Yeah, you will. You handsome bastard.
Oh my God. How is it even possible? Anyway.
So And then I just started interviewing bands and then I was in a couple like local bands from Portland. I was in a band called 33.
I totally remember that band.
I was in 33 and then I was in Broadway Calls for a little while.
But that came later.
That came later.
I still want to talk about
I was in those bands, but then like I was interviewing bands. Then I started to get recognized by this promoter in Portland named Mike Thrasher.
Ooh.
And then Mike was like, do you want to come work for me? And so I just ended up like, I'd either like run the door to shows or I was like his contract administrator in his office.
Did you ever like intern there or was it?
No,
like,
he just hired me.
That's so dope.
I mean, Portland's a small town and I was I was young and around and not causing problems and fucked up at shows.
And enthusiastic.
He's like, and enthusiastic. Sure. Yeah. So he was like, come work for me. And so it was I mean, I was like literally like doing door at shows and just like whatever I could. And eventually I was a production manager for him.
You moved your way up like in Thrasher Presents.
I did. And then at the same time, I was like still like interviewing bands and going to shows. And I interviewed this band, the Ataris. And they played 17 Nautical Miles, which was a 75 person club in Portland, probably before your time.
Definitely before my time.
And I interviewed them and they were like, you want to come on tour with us? And I was like, I don't know what that is, but that sounds cool. And I would then
so they were the first band that gave you that's wild, man.
Yeah. And so they were and I just went on tour with them for 2 years and learned. Yeah.
That on the what's that record? Blue Skies.
It was the end of the Blue Skies.
Wow. Because that's when I got into Ataris. Like,
oh yeah. I mean there was like a zeit in like the pop punk world.
Right.
Which you know, I was always like straddled a lot of lines between like being like really into metal and really into like super sappy pop punk.
Dude,
you know?
I mean, I kind of fell like when I was going to shows, it started off as like the pop punk stuff. It started off like with like Epitaph and Fat Records for me. You know, just being like in like the Salt Lake City, you know, punk scene.
Yeah.
Quotations. Yeah, yeah. From there, then I started getting like hardcore music. And then I started getting into like what, you know, not what today's emo music is, but then I started getting into like Vagrant Records stuff like Get Up Kids and, you know, Kofax and Anniversary and
so deep,
you know,
deep cuts.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what else. No Motive. You know,
they were No Motive was the opening band on my first tour ever.
Oh,
with really? The
Ataris. Okay, that's so awesome, man.
Yeah,
okay.
I still talk to those guys.
That's cool. That's the last time I saw them. They were playing some weird like college show in Irvine, and that was. And I think Roger was playing. I think he was playing drums at that point. He moved from bass to drums.
Yeah, he thinks so. Yes, because Pat quit.
Right.
He moved from bass to drums. And then Roger, I saw him years later. He was like doing front of house for RX Bandits.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He's just such a talented. Okay. He's like one of the most talented dudes I know.
I barely know those guys. I've met them like a handful of times. But this is, you know, No Motive used to come to Salt Lake. Like there was a period, I think they came like 10 times in a year. I was like, oh, No Motive's coming back.
That
okay,
in
cool.
Portland, that was the Casualties.
Oh, really?
For some reason. For some reason, like every other show, and this is back in my former life when I was married, and you know my ex.
Sure.
But, like, we would go to shows, and it'd be a thing where we'd like roll in, and And we'd be like, what the are you fucking the Casualties again? They were like the opener on it, like from like yeah. Andrew WK. Oh, yep. Casualties oh, are opening. Casualties, okay, yep. Yeah, sure.
So that must have been like early 2000s.
It was. Yeah.
So okay, so you're going to shows. You're working with Mike Thrasher. You go on tour with the Ataris.
Yeah.
What happens from there? So you meet a lot of people. I'm assuming just from being on tour and like.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Ataris were kind of having their like moments.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was the Blue Skies record to come out, and that was like, I mean, I think I saw them with before I worked for them with MXPX.
Got yeah.
La Luna, like
in Shades Apart. Was that the tour?
Maybe.
Okay.
I think so. And I think the Ataris maybe were main support.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Something like that.
And then you know, I was a fan of theirs. Then, you know, we met and, you know, they took me on tour.
Yeah.
And then I just like learned everything not to do on tour.
Right.
Because I was like 19 years old and just being like, yes. This is how it is.
Yep.
Like, all right, sick. And then like, you know, I think my second tour was the Fat Records tour.
Oh my God.
And so it was because the Ataris had that EP out.
Right.
And so we were the first of four on that one. And that was No Use for a Name, Good Riddance, the Mad Caddies, and the Ataris.
Wow.
And to me at the time, is like I was 20 then.
I went to that tour, but the Ataris weren't on it. It was this band. Oh my gosh. It's going to drive me crazy. They're from Germany. They're really sweet.
Germany?
Yeah, from Germany.
What band was it called?
Oh God, it's gonna come to me. I'll
Raised have
to
Fist?
No, it wasn't Raised Fist. Oh, this is gonna
Are
drive
they German
me
or Swedish?
It was Bracket was number two, then
nice.
Mad Caddies, then
nice.
No Use for a Name, and who's the? Oh, it started with a D, I think. Downside, down. Oh God,
there's so many of those.
I know. I'll. They're really great, but yeah. Anyway, back to
how
what
many?
You're saying.
How many? cities at the zeitgeist of pop punk music? How many cities had a band in it called Down and Out? Do you think?
At least one in every other state, like at least, right? Like, so there might have been 25 yeah. or like Red Letter Day or some shit, right? That's another one of those.
Yeah,
like,
so great.
I think I got a name.
I got so, it. Okay, yep. Sick. Yeah.
So,
all right, great.
So you're on this Fat Records tour. You yeah. keep going. Okay.
And yeah. And then I don't know. I just.
Oh, the band's called Consumed. That was the band. Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Why
I remember those guys.
D? It didn't start with a D. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
you were close.
Anyway.
One
okay.
letter off.
Back to reality.
Okay. Back to reality.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm on that tour and, you know, I'm just kind of living it up, and eventually, okay. And to me, at that time, as a 20-year-old kid, to me, No Use for a Name and Good Riddance were the biggest bands
oh,
in the
yeah.
world.
100%.
And it was like that was the era when No Use for a Name had put out More Betterness, which is still my favorite record they made,
yeah.
and Good Riddance had put out Operation Phoenix.
Okay, yeah, No Use for a Name was probably the fourth band, or some trying. No, that was my fifth tour I ever did. Was with No Use for a Name. Open
the best.
Yeah,
the
that
best.
Was during Hard Rock Bottom, and man, and it was right before Yellow Card hit like Ocean Avenue
yeah.
era too. But I'm just sorry, we have a lot of parallels. So
yeah,
that's
yeah,
why I'm
no,
just
no,
like,
yeah,
it's,
yeah.
music never makes sense. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
there's no rhyme or reason why anything happens to anybody.
Yeah, 100%.
And it took me a long time to learn that. It just kind of it happens with how much work you want to put into it. And I think a lot of like the listeners that listen to the show are trying to like get into music and they're
yeah.
trying to figure out like, well, how did he do it? I can do it, can't I? I don't
mean,
know. And Yeah.
My advice to your listeners to get into music is just like, don't.
And you know, on every show, and this won't be an exception, but I think on every single show that I have, I say 9 times out of 10 bands fail. And the 1 in 10 that succeed were the ones that were too stupid to stop.
Yeah.
That's music.
Yeah.
Truly.
Yeah.
I mean, like, dude, I mean, look at all the bands I've been in. Like, those guys aren't doing it anymore. Like, literally every,
yeah.
almost every band I've been in. It's like, somehow I'm still the cockroach in the you know in the music scene. I'm like, I'm still here. What's going on, man? I'm 38. Like, what? How is this happening? You know? And it's really awesome though, man. I guess we just have fans. We have good fans, and I'm thankful every day. But back
yeah.
to Chris. I'm sorry. We just keep on going on so many tangents, man.
Tangents.
It's just because we haven't hung out in a long time.
I know, dude.
And you're so easy to hang out with. It's great.
Thanks, man.
And you show me all the cool sites in Portland to go to. So I have my regular stops now.
Aww.
You know. Because of you.
We can talk about that. We can talk about that weird brunch at Tin
oh,
Shed.
Yeah, we can. Later in the show.
Okay, so tour. Okay, so basically here's what happened. I was fucking 20 years old
yeah.
and I was learning all of the wrong things to do
right.
on tour because I was learning from like the people that I was working with who were not the best. And Tony from No Use.
Yeah. Got rest
his soul,
yes.
the, one of the best,
mm-hmm.
one of the best dudes ever.
Yep.
And Russ from Good Riddance pulled me aside one day and they're just like, hey man, you got to get your shit together. Like, you're a good dude, but like, those dudes aren't good dudes and you could have a future doing this. So like, you got to look out for yourself.
Wow.
And then that kind of like, I mean, those guys saw something in me,
yeah,
which was really great of them to, mm-hmm. which, and I actually told, I texted Russ that story a little while ago. Cause I'm working on a book.
Oh, we gotta get more into that too.
Writing's hard. but I texted, and Russ was just like, oh yeah, I remember that, was great.
Yeah.
Good memory, dude. But yeah, and I just kind of like after that,
yeah.
went to up to Shannon Gabriel, who's their guitar tech, and was like, I knew how to guitar tech,
mm-hmm.
But not, I wasn't super great.
Okay.
But I was like, how do I do this the right way? And he's like, grab a station, grab a table. I'm going to walk you through it. And like, showed me how to like tech guitars for tour, like how to do it like on the fly and like how to like have a good setup and stuff. And then I went up to their tour manager, Randy. I was like, how do I settle a show? He's like, I'm going to show you. And like, there was all this knowledge, you know? And to me at the time, those were like huge bands, you
right.
know, and they were touring in RVs. I was like, oh my God, how do they have RVs? And now it's like,
right.
you know, I've progressed a bit beyond that
you
in my career.
You definitely have.
But like, that was the foundation for like how I learned kind of how to do stuff where I was like,
bro,
okay,
you've
cool.
worked with like some of the biggest DJs in the world. Like, we got to get into that. Pressing the buttons, you know,
I get PTSD whenever I hear it.
Yeah, all the nightclubs and crap. Okay, so you're learning all these different trades,
yeah.
and you're going to people. And then for a long time, didn't that somehow that led you to like Zebrahead or something, right?
Yeah, so we did a week of dates with less than J. No, I'm sorry. Kevin Lyman
yeah.
was going to manage the Ataris, and they were talking to him, and then he gave us 2 weeks of dates on the Warped Tour.
Okay.
And then that led into a run of dates with Less Than Jake.
Okay.
And then the Zebrahead guys were on the Less Than Jake tour. The Ataris were first of three. Zebrahead was main support.
Okay.
And I had known the Zebrahead guys because I interviewed them for that fucking
zine.
That's
right. So you were like the guy that would just go to all the shows, and you were like
interviewing everybody.
Dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I feel like I'm pretty easy to like hang out with and get along with. So
totally.
People would be like, you just want to chill, dude? And I'm like, yeah. I was like an 18, 19 year old kid. I didn't know anybody. I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
And so, yeah, I knew those guys a little bit and they remembered me. And then after that, a tour, that was the last tour I did with the Ataris. And then the Zebrahead guys were like, do you want to come on tour with us? I was like, okay.
Because well, you did that for a while, I think.
I was with them. I was their guitar tech and backline tech for 2 or 3 years, and then I was also their tour manager I was with them for 4 or 5 years.
Wow, man. Yeah, my buddy Adrian just started singing and playing
yeah.
guitar for them, which
yeah.
is wild. So he's still doing Assuming We Survive. I'm still managing them.
Yeah.
You know?
Ed from Zebrahead, for those that don't know, owns a very reputable case company, and
yes.
he just built me a new workbox.
Oh, that's great.
And then he was telling me all about Adrian, and I was like, oh my God, is he still doing the band? And Ryan's managing that band?
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
so
yeah.
great.
it's wild, man. See, everything's small.
It's
small
so small.
World.
Well, the thing about it, here's what I think. I think that, like, this is such a, I mean, it, you know, it's a multi-billion-dollar-a-year industry, but it's also, like, a niche enough industry
mm-hmm.
to where if you have a decent reputation and you don't wash out, because a lot of people wash out, like, they can do it for, like, 5 years or something, and then they're like, I gotta go, like, sell insurance or do whatever. They move
right.
on. If you're just around, the world's not that big.
Right.
You know? I
True.
Mean, I also toured direct Tenacious D, and so we were in Europe on our last tour, and
mm-hmm.
the Papa Roach guys came to that show.
Uh-huh.
And then the dude who was playing drums in Papa Roach...
Tony. Yeah.
was played drums in Unwritten Law when Zebrahead was on tour with them years and years ago.
God.
I don't think I'd seen him in 15 years or something. And
yeah.
he like walked right at me. He's like, hey, Chris, what's going on? I was like, oh my God, what are you doing? It's
Again,
just like, it's
world so... is so small, man. And then it's like, I play so many different styles of music, but it's,
yeah.
dude, it's all the same, man. At the end
yeah.
of the day.
Like, I mean, if you can like, I don't know. It's like, I've worked for a lot of people that I'm a fan of that wasn't
yeah.
a great working experience.
Sure.
And then like, I've worked for people that like, I'm like, yeah, music's fine.
Right.
But the people are so,
so
lovely
great.
That
yes.
I become a fan of their music through that.
Right.
And I just want to support it. There's, you know, it's so weird how you
mm-hmm.
different people come to different things in this. Cause it's
right.
like, again, if you have a good reputation and you're a good hang and like,
yeah,
you know, and you like have your shit together and you're not a total fucking bummer, like,
right.
you know, you're kind of going to be around.
I would say 90% of the time that's true.
Yes.
Cause there's definitely a case of people, you know, that I don't think deserve success at just the way they treat people. You know what I mean? But
yeah, I mean, I always say that you're going to every branch that you snap climbing up to the top of the tree is going to break when you fall.
True.
It's not going to be there to catch you.
Right.
And so everybody that you've stepped on is not going to be there on your way down.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're going to step on the branch, make sure the branch is sturdy enough so that if you do fall, they'll catch you.
That's right. No, that's right.
I'm just kidding. Okay. I think this is a good point to go, or a good segue to go into a commercial break. So we'll be right back and we'll continue this with Chris Paulus. Chris,
what are you laughing about?
That story you just told me.
Oh yeah, that one.
No, I'm just kidding. I do that. Sorry, man. You know, it's this thing I do. It's mostly just so I know where to edit. But but what I was gonna say is, you know, I do this bit. I think Andy Kaufman is hilarious, and so I do this. You know, it's kind of Andy Kaufman humor, just coming in and laughing and doing whatever. And it's really not funny anymore. And I've done it on every single episode, and it's like so not funny that it becomes funny. Yeah, exactly.
Ryan, you old codger.
So dumb. You're like, what? Okay, so we're back. We're finally back. All right, so you're going on tour. Where were we? You were with Zebrahead for a while.
Zebrahead, big in Japan.
Big in Japan.
Big
yes,
in Japan.
Huge in Japan.
Huge in Japan. Like we would go to Japan. I went to Japan 2 to 3 times a year for 5 years. It was awesome. Mm. It was the coolest thing.
You know, I actually have a quick Zebrahead story. I was going to Japan on vacation, and I turn around and I see Dan. You know, Dan. From Zebrahead, he's like Ryan, and I'm looking, I'm like, holy shit, I'm like, what are you doing here? He's like, we're going to Japan. I'm like, on tour. I'm like, I'm going to Japan on vacation. So they took me into the United Lounge, and we just got completely hammered, and then we went on the flight, and we sat like by them. We like got, you know, got a small upgrade just from hanging out with them. It was great. They're the best. And then we ended up going to like a show there's in Japan, I think, and it was like a underplay. Mm-hmm. But dude, there's still like 2,000 people there.
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck is happening? So we ended up hanging out, going to eat with them. And I mean, man, they're like royalty over there. It's nuts.
Oh yeah. It's great. You know? It's such a, we were in a restaurant one time in a yakitori place.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like a big official, cause they do these like big official dinners where like the label takes you out and it's in a room and all that.
I've done it one time, like over in Japan. I played with my old guitar player from my old band. His name's Jackie. He's got this band called Cry Venom, and we went over there and I had to fill in, and it was wonderful. So we did the whole thing where the label takes you out and it's awkward and there's a translator and all this stuff.
This wasn't that. This was just like, we had a day off, let's go get some food.
Sure.
And we go to this place, and it was during Summer Sonic, and these, I forget what they're called, but the Japanese guys that all wear the suit men or whatever, salarymen.
Okay.
A couple of them like went over and looked at us and just started like chanting and chugging beers, and we're like, oh man, like guys are getting recognized. Feels good.
Yeah.
Living large in Japan. And their friend comes over and goes like, we are a big fan of Rancid. Because Ben had this big mohawk at the time.
So he just thought it was Rancid.
So deflated. So awesome.
That's fucking hilarious, dude. Yeah, we went to this club. I won't mention what it was called, but we went to this one club, and our friend Taka runs it. And everywhere Ben goes, he likes to pretend it's his birthday.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, brought him a big old cake. You know, I don't
I know which I know which club you're talking about.
And I don't know how I legitimately don't know how he gets away with it every time. Like, hey, it's my birthday. And everybody's like, oh, happy birthday, Ben. You know, like,
dude, oh, yeah.
How does that happen? I whatever. It doesn't matter.
It's a good time.
So I was gonna tell you too, I've actually crossed paths with you on tour too. Like I remember my old band was supposed to play at the Masquerade in Atlanta.
That's right.
All Time Low was upstairs, and then you were downstairs at the time with Dylan Francis.
Dylan Francis.
That's
crazy.
I mean, I just how do you get involved in the cause you're like, dude, not doing punk rock anymore, man. It's all DJs, it's all synth bands, it's all whatever, you know, it's just like you've completely like immersed yourself into like a whole different genre. It's like it's amazing.
It's accidental. It's like, okay, this is a cool thing. I mean, the long and short of it was, you know, I wanted to get off the road initially. And so I got a job in Portland working at an agency called Big Shot Touring Artists.
Okay.
Which was run by a guy named Kevin French.
Okay.
And Kevin hired me to be his assistant, and I eventually became an agent there.
Yep.
Kevin has since moved on, and he's like at CAA now and books like Tame Impala and The National, these like huge
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
One of the best dudes in the industry, one of the best guys. But he kind of gave me my start on that side of things.
Okay. Because you started booking bands for a while, too.
Yeah, yeah. And so when Kevin left, I started my own agency called Bridge City.
Yep.
And so I booked a lot of that, like, you know, kind of like punk dudes that play Americana music.
Yes.
A lot of stuff that would do, like, the revival tour with Chuck Reagan, but I, you know, like, Drag the River, Austin
Used to
Lucas.
Book one of my really, really close friends, Brett Detter.
Yep. Yeah, I helped him out a little bit. Yeah.
So that's cool. Didn't you booked Mike Carrera as well, didn't you?
I booked Tumble Down for Mike.
Tumble Down, that's
his country band.
Yep.
Yeah, I did that. But what kind of happened is when I started the agency, it's just like that was my own company, so my guaranteed paycheck went away, and then the same time that happened, a friend of mine called me and was like, do you want to go on tour with Diplo and Major Lazer?
Oh my God.
Like, and this was,
how do you get those calls? Not you, but I'm saying like rhetorically, like, how do you get those calls? It's nuts.
I don't know. Just, you know? I don't know, man. Just happens.
You just hang out.
Just hang out. I was like, that was 2009. And I was like, I don't know what that is, but that sounds cool.
Yep.
I was like, didn't that dude make an MIA record?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's all I knew.
Yeah.
And then I went on tour, and that was kind of like when the big zeitgeist of like dance music started to happen in the States.
Yeah.
And it was like
Skrillex became like huge.
Oh yeah. You know? I mean, I was working with Wes or Diplo when all of that stuff was breaking. So it was just like everyone's careers were skyrocketing. And we, you know, I like to say that we like start, and this is going to sound so fucking pretentious, but it's like, we started in the back of the plane and then like went to the front of the plane, and then we're in business class, and then had our own plane, towards the end of my run with them.
Which is insane. Like, that's got to be crazy, too, because, like, I have a friend that works for Steve Aoki.
Yeah.
His name's Dylan.
I love Dylan.
And Dylan's great. But, like, Dylan, again, old, like, used to be, like, a punk rock guy,
yeah.
You know? And he used to, you know, go on like, tours that I'd be on and whatever, and then you just see him, like, excel. I remember, man, he was, like, playing for this band called All-Star Weekend, and I remember he was like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do, man. Like, this is it. And then, dude, he gets a call from Steve Aoki. He's been with them ever since. It's been, like, years. But it's just like...
Dylan's great. Dylan's one of the best.
I would look at their itineraries and be crazy. Be like, okay, tonight's Las Vegas. Then tomorrow night's, like, you know, Beijing, China.
Yeah.
And then the next day's, like, South Africa. And I'm like, how are you doing all this, you know? But it's like the DJ thing. You don't have to, like, really bring a whole lot. It's just, it's all production and lights and stuff, right?
I mean, you're not, it just depends on what you're trying to do,
right?
What kind of a show you're trying to deliver. Like, I mean, if it's like if there's a show you're trying to have people see and you're doing like a routed production tour or something like that, that's very different than like the kind of standard, like you're going to go into like a soft ticket nightclub and, you know, your DJ backline is going to be there because everyone uses kind of the same shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like a video wall and some lights and you just kind of like, you can bring your dudes to run that, but also like the house guys know what they're doing. So you can like deliver them like a folder of visuals and they just kind of do it.
Wow.
You know,
man.
it just really depends on the dynamic. But like, if you're just like,
sounds like it's easier and harder at the same time.
The schedule is pretty intense. I mean, when I was doing the stuff with Diplo, it was like that dude is the hardest working dude I've ever worked for. Like, but I can like, after working for him, like nothing really scares me now.
Right.
Like I don't get intimidated by stuff.
Has anybody told you kind of look like Diplo? Is that ever been a thing?
That used to happen a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I didn't want to say anything, but I was just like, you know, you kind of look like him.
We would tell people we were cousins.
Okay.
When they would ask, just like, oh, not again.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, I mean, it was like fly in.
Yeah.
Do the gig, which is, it's a club. So it's always like late, you know.
You were tour managing at this point?
Managing him. Yeah.
So, I mean, like, what? That's got to be insane, too. Like, hey, we need all these bottles of alcohol. We need, like, this kind of room. Or, I mean, I don't know what the DJ world's like. You know,
some people do that. I mean, you know, we had a lot of stuff on our rider, but it was like, a lot of it was like, who's going to hang out with us in this town? Who do we know? Like, what, is there like a producer he wants to work with or a rapper he wants to work with? Some other folks that we want to talk to about some other things. Like, who's going to hang out with us that night? And so that stuff's mostly for them. Like, you can't really keep that schedule and party. So we do that gig, and then we'd inevitably end up at like some after party where he DJ. Occasionally we end up at like
So you're doing like three gigs in a night or some shit.
Wow. Yeah. Two to three gigs. And then at some other afters thing or whatever, if we're feeling saucy. And then the next day, get up before we get on the plane, go to like whatever studio we can find with whatever like rapper or producer is there and like show them some beats. Work with them, see if there's a vibe there or whatever, and then go get on a plane and then rinse and repeat.
Wow.
And so we did that for like, it was like it averaged 250 days a year or something. It was 4 years when I was with him.
Oh my God.
So yeah, it was just like, I mean, with a schedule that crazy, there's stuff that's just bound to like give. And so every situation got thrown at me and I just had to like figure it out.
Do you have beds on those private jets? Were there beds?
It was early days private jets with him.
Uh-huh.
So it was just like, it
reclining
was
chairs.
It was reclining chairs. It was fine. Yeah. I don't know what he's rolling in now.
Yeah. I mean, to me, that all seems wild, but I mean, private jets scare the shit out of me only because I've just heard, you know, horror stories from bands and, you know, hopefully, you know, knock on wood, but hopefully you've never had to.
Oh my gosh.
Experiences with the plane, but
tour managing Zed's Dead.
Okay.
This was post Diplo, post Major Lazer, post Dylan Francis. I was their guy for 3 years, I think.
Okay.
And there was a really bad winter storm and we had like flown into DC for this gig, did the gig. We're flying out to go do like a weekend in Maine, Connecticut and Boston.
Okay.
And it was like, cool, we're just going to fly in and like rent a minivan. Cause it was like their visuals guy, the two dudes and me. It was going to be pretty easy.
Okay.
This gnarly winter storm came and I was just like, the first gig was the big money gig. And it's like, we can't really miss this one. And so I was like, let's just get a jet. And it was because we just like,
did it offset the guarantee or something? Or was it like,
I mean, yeah, I mean, of course, I mean, it costs more money, but like, we walked into the airport and it was like a bad movie where like all of a sudden, the board with all the flights just went like canceled.
I've been there.
Horrible. And I was like, okay, we got to make this gig. And so like, I got a jet on 2 hours notice, like on our budget. And it was like a prop plane.
Oh man.
And it was like it was four of us in tiny chairs on a prop plane. And it was like in a winter storm on the Eastern Seaboard.
And you made it to the gig.
We made it. Yeah. But it was also just like, it was also just, I mean, we got there an hour before we were supposed to play the first gig. We did. And it's DJ stuff. So it's fine. Like, you know, they can roll in and play.
5 minutes before, 5 minutes, 10 minutes before. Yeah. You don't want to, but
you don't want to because you want to, because you know, sometimes you talk to the club and they're like, this is what's here. And then you walk in like, this is what you told me what was here. And you got to kind of figure it out.
Yeah.
You know,
doing the walkthrough.
Yeah. Doing a little sound check. Mm-hmm. That's some industry jargon there. It's called sound check.
Sound check. Yeah.
and then we got the minivan and did the rest of the gigs, but it was like, literally like halfway in the flight. And it was like,
do these people do merch?
On the routed stuff, we would do merch.
Yeah. But on the club stuff. Yeah.
The club, it really depended. Mm-hmm. So when I was with Dylan Francis, I didn't do a ton of club stuff with him. He was doing routed tours at that point, like trying to do his own show. And so we had merch. We had someone that sold merch and it was like, because they were in like proper venues. It wasn't in like soft ticket nightclubs.
Right. Because I went to one of those.
You went to the one when we were at the bottom of the masquerade, the old masquerade.
Right. The old masquerade.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then for the Diplo stuff, that was a lot of soft ticket nightclubs and they don't even know what merch is.
Right.
So they don't have a merch booth. There's nothing in there. They're trying to sell like tables and bottle service.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, you're getting paid a ton of money to DJ. So it's like, it got to the point where it's like, let's just throw t-shirts out to like brand awareness.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that.
Man.
Such
a different world.
It's such a different world. You know, I mean, it's, you have to think about it differently. You know, my days on the road currently with the Midnight Guys.
Yeah. I want to get to that too. Cause I really love the band. I just kind of like discovered them, you know, from like Spotify and YouTube stuff. And then when you told me you're working with them, I was like, wait, what?
I don't believe that's not what you said.
What do you mean?
What you said is, I love that band. Can I play drums in that
band? I did say that too. That was a long time ago. Now that I'm thinking about it. But, yeah, you know, if the Midnight ever need a drummer. I always say that, you know, I end up still playing for other bands when like my band's not doing stuff. Like it's still happening. Like I did some shows with the Juliana Theory.
I know you invited me and I couldn't make it.
Yeah, and man, it was a lot of fun, you know. I know. So yeah, but the Midnight, I really love that band. I think they're really great and they've been going for a while.
Yeah, that's
so like how did they even come out? Because that's kind of similar too. They're a kind of band that could just like kind of, you know, get on a jet if they wanted to. I don't think they will, but I'm saying like, you know, they can get on a jet and go play these private clubs.
They're like
in the in between. You know, they could go do a DJ thing or they can go do.
It
you know?
Used to be that way. Okay. So we've been really focused on getting them to be like a band.
Right.
And so for this next, this is if this airs in October. So for the next tour, we'll be a 5-piece.
Oh, wow.
And so it's a full band. And Tim is playing drums in the band. Who's the, who's,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Cause Tim, kinda,
when I went to Salt Lake, he had like a little, roto setup.
Yeah, SPD. Yeah. Yeah. We had him on SPD and then we had a couple toms, that had triggers on them. But he, Tim's been playing drums for 20 years.
It's wild.
And so he, actually longer than that. That's what he grew up playing. His dad was a drummer. And so that's his instrument, but he, you know, just gravitated towards producing.
Yeah.
And then as we've expanded the band, you know, he's decided he wants to play drums, which
that's
is going to
so
be,
sick.
Which is going to be great. I mean, it's a full, it's a, I mean, it's live synths.
Right.
It's drum. It's the whole thing. It's a full band. So yeah, initially we were doing some of that stuff, but now the show's just gotten a little bit big.
Yeah.
And we want to present it in a certain way. So we're kind of like tethered to that. And I mean, yeah, I guess we could go do DJ stuff, but like, you know,
it's like, couldn't we
do sometimes, but it's like, you know, it's
private party stuff or like Sundance or
we've done that kind of
cash grab.
Yeah. We've done some of that corporate stuff and you know, that stuff's always fine. You know, it's never, you know,
you doesn't lift the needle. It's just there.
Yeah. And it's fine. You know, I can't complain about that stuff. You know, you know what you're walking into. You're like, okay, I'm going to play in front of this giant thing that says like the Texas Lottery. Yeah.
I remember I went to, so there was a moment in Salt Lake where like my band played and then the next night there was two shows happening like across the street. It was like the Fever. So I went to go see that.
Uh-huh.
And then I went to your show. Uh-huh. You know, I went to go see the Midnight and then we had sushi.
Yeah.
And those guys were really super cool and nice. And you know, and I'm sure they know about our band, but like, you know, it's a whole thing. I'm telling you, everybody in music somehow is separated by like a few degrees.
Totally.
You know?
No.
So the world is so tiny. But okay, I think we're gonna take another break, and then when we come back, we'll just keep talking about, you know, life.
Oh, I'm ready. Let's go.
All right. We'll be right back.
Oh my gosh, I know, Ryan. You killed that guy. Remember that? What?
That wasn't me. Okay.
No, that was
the guy that we won't talk about. We won't talk about him. We just won't talk about him, you know?
Oh, that
He's
got
a
dark.
Figment. Yeah. Yeah. It got really dark.
Did I just give you PTSD?
You're the best. I love you, man. So, okay, so you're touring around with all these bands. So, I mean, like, you know, you even helped me get like a couple gigs, man. I'm serious.
I did?
Yeah, you were working with this band called Trust, and I had to fill in for them.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and they're still going. I still see their name. Even heard of this band when you were like, hey Ryan, like we just need somebody for like two shows. Can you do it? And I was learning songs on a plane coming back from Japan. I was like on the flight, and then it's like to me as a musician.
And you were watching your laptop at the gig. I saw that.
Yeah,
you're counting. Yeah,
I couldn't, bro. Okay, for anybody that doesn't know this band Trust, I think Chris called me. It was like, I don't know, an hour set.
Yeah.
And their songs are like 8 minutes long and there's like almost no structure. It's like, okay, here's like 7 bars of this, but then you get 8 and then it's like not, and it's like not,
it's goth dance music.
It's goth dance music. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I was just like, I've never done anything like this, but I mean, I nailed it, but it was just like,
yeah, you nailed it.
But I had to read off of my computer too.
Yeah. I saw that the whole gig. It was Cloak and Dagger Fest, I think this was.
And so, dude, we went on after the Jesus and Mary chain and I was like, no one's going to be here for this. They're all going to leave. And then sure enough, it's like at the Globe Theater in downtown LA, it is like beyond sold out. It's like 1 a.m.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, I'm playing. It was like the latest show I've ever done, by the way, but it was like 1 a.m.
Yeah.
And then everybody in the front was like doing a bunch of blow. And I was like, what the hell am I walking into? It was really fun though, to watch just that world of, you know, music.
Oh yeah.
And but I guess my point is that like being a drummer, I love walking into every kind of situation because it means that I can be valuable at any given point. I don't ever really want to just be, you know, tied down to one style. I need to know them all.
Yeah.
You know, you just never know. Never know what's going to happen in this life, dude.
You going to start a black metal band with me?
Hey, we've talked about this for years, but but what I was going to say is with you, it's like, I don't know. You and I are similar in the sense we're like, cause I've tour managed before. Like I tour managed like the Aquabats and I tour managed this band called Dope. You know?
Oh yeah, that's right. You introduced me to that dude.
Yeah, Etzel. Yeah.
Etzel, he's so sweet.
He is a sweetheart. Yeah, yeah. I got to tour manage their pre-shows to opening for Judas Priest over in Europe. And that was really, nice. Yeah, it was like warm up shows for them. Anyway, yeah. But like, I always figured that like the more you know, the better, like, and just in music industry, whatever, the more you know, the better off you are. Or the worse off you are.
No, I think that's...
you know? So I always try to do that. I just came from this, like, DIY mentality. And it's the same thing with you, because you play guitar. Yeah. You've been in bands.
Poorly.
Yeah. You've been in bands. You've worked at, like, big management companies, big booking agencies. So I feel like the more you know, too, just the more... The better off you are.
I feel like that's just, like, a good lesson for life, though.
Right.
I mean, aside from the music, is just, like,
knowing every facet of, like...
Take as much in as you can of everything. Like, it's, you know, life's too short, dude. Like, just, like...
It is too short.
I don't know. There's a lot of cool stuff in the planet.
There, you know? there is, man. It's just, like...
Go eat some weird food. Go eat a bug. Go eat a bug, man.
I've always loved traveling. I think my first tour that I ever did, I really was like, wait, this is what touring's like? And I hated it. It's because it also depends on who you surround yourself with, you know? Your whole band could be rad, and then there could be like that one person that just ruins it for everybody.
Oh, sure.
You know what I mean? It's like, and I know you've experienced that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've experienced it, but it's like bands are like, they're like movies, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, it's kind of the same movie, but it's just like with different characters and different scenarios happen. And sometimes you're in big rooms, sometimes you're in small rooms, but it's like, it's kind of the same movie. So you have to decide being in music if you like that movie. Right.
Yeah. And so, I mean, like, yeah, no, you're totally right.
How long it is. Yeah.
Sometimes you have to just also embrace the chaos. I mean, at that, when I was in bands, and none of my bands were super successful, but like when I was playing with the Broadway Calls guys.
Yeah.
I remember
that was on Adeline Records.
It was Adeline and then Side One Dummy.
Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah. And then I just remember we would do these tours, and it reminded me of when I worked for the Ataris, because the Ataris would do tours that were three months long with 2 days off.
In a van? Yeah.
With no trailer. Thankfully, we had a trailer for Broadway Calls, but we would do the same thing, just like book every gig. And so we would play everywhere. And I think we were in somewhere in Louisiana, maybe Baton Rouge. Mm-hmm. And we played some I think it was a trailer, like an actual like single wide trailer.
Oh, my God.
And it was like sort of a venue in the middle of a field. And these people were like, these like punk dudes were like, oh, yeah, you can come back and stay at our house. We're like, oh, great. And we're just like scummy because we've been playing those like super DIY basement shows for like the last 2 weeks and like hadn't had a good shower. I'm like, these guys seem okay.
Right.
And then we like get to their place and it's like in this forest and it's like, okay, this seems all right. Like, yeah, just walk on in when you get there. And we walk in and they're like, all have cigs hanging out of their mouth inside playing PlayStation and it just reeks like beer and cigarettes.
Ugh.
And you just go, not it. Run back out to the van.
And you just sleep
and you sleep in the back of the van. Yeah. But then you got your laptop. So what you got to do is move the van closer to the house.
So you get the Wi-Fi.
So you and Josh, the drummer, who managed to make the other call, could watch a movie in the back of the van.
Yeah.
Well, your other
man.
People on tour are stuck in the SIG house.
Jeez. Yeah, I've been in all sorts of scenarios, man, where, you know, I slept on like a garage floor. Slept in crazy, like,
done that.
Drugged out hotels. On people's floors where you're like, why am I even here? Do I need to go get checked for something after that?
You're like why am I itchy?
Why are these weird bruises on my legs and arms and stuff? I mean, is there a moment that like you're just like, you know what? I feel like I could do music now for the rest of my life. Like is there some sort of like moment that you had when you're on tour? Like, okay, I think now, because with me, it's always like you never know, dude. With music, it can end like at any point, you know. For like just being a musician, so I mean, for you, did you ever have this moment where you're just like, okay, I know I'm going to be doing music now for like the rest of my life? Is it?
I think it was.
I feel like you're a lifer, dude.
I'm a lifer. Yeah, I mean, I think I've resigned myself to it because I've quit the music industry a few times.
I
always come back.
You always come back.
You know, tried to finish my degree. I went and worked at a coffee shop. You know, I did all kinds of stuff. And I wouldn't say I went back to music. I would say it kept finding me.
Because
every time I would quit to go do something else, someone would call me with like an interesting offer.
Right.
Or like a different job opportunity where I was like, what? That's something I've always been interested in. I'm going to go try and do that for a while. And then see how I can apply those skills to everything else that I've learned. It kind of found me. I don't know. I mean, I for a while when you're in it, and when I was doing that, when I was in that DJ world, I mean, it ground me to a pulp. I mean, it's so busy. There's no downtime. You don't have time to reflect.
Yeah. Every hour is like accounted for.
Yeah. It's crazy. And you know, you're sleeping on the plane, you know, you're just, you're going. And it's props to people that do that, because like,
I think that's why I asked if you had a bed, because like when artists are that big and their schedules are that crazy, mm-hmm. it's like, dude, you're sleeping up for like 12 hours on a jet, like going somewhere, and you're just going around. Like, none of the routing makes any sense. You're just going
to this day, when I get on a plane to fly, which is frequently, I have Pavlov's dog. I think that's the right phrase. I think I've Pavlov's dog myself. Whenever like whenever the door closes,
you're just like,
and the pressure goes up, it just knocks me out.
Yeah,
because
you're so used to it.
Yeah, I mean, but this was like, I mean, I started with in the DJ world in 2009. Left it, I think, in 2017 or 2016.
Yeah.
And so I just trained my body to do that, because that was the only time you could sleep, was like on a plane, you know?
Yeah.
So I just learned how to do it.
People are like, poor DJs. They have to like fly everywhere. But it's like, no, dude, like when you're flying everywhere, you're still working. Like,
you're working.
You're like kind of propped up. It's not like you get to sleep in a bed and there's no sounds or any. No, it's like, you know, the automobiles keep moving, the planes keep going, the trains keep going. It's just, it never stops, man.
It just never stops. And then it's just a different dynamic, you know? It's like you get a text that says like, yo, my friend Riff Raff is going to come find you. And then you're like, who?
You're like,
oh, my friend Riff Raff. You'll know him when you see him. And this guy with these cornrows shows up in these contacts and like shark's tooth grill in his face. And he's just like, starts screaming about you're going to give me a blinged out pass, son. And then you don't know who it is. And it's like, oh, this is my friend Riff Raff. And you're like, oh, okay.
I met that guy. I was on tour with him once. I was filling in for Matchbook Romance.
Uh-huh.
And it was like a Warped Tour thing.
Yeah.
And like, dude, he was working out the entire time. He's a big guy.
I don't
know if he was big when you saw him, but man, he was just like jacked.
It was
up
when he was starting to get big. Yeah, he's great. He's like,
I don't know the guy. I'm just saying, I'd see him work out.
I mean, he's a character.
Time.
He's he's a total character. And that's right. You gotta embrace that, be like, then you get to know the guy, you're like, okay, yeah, you're like, you're all right. Like, you know, but you're like, you meet the dude and you're like, oh my gosh.
You're like, run.
Who is this cartoon character?
Right. Yeah, I just, you know, I'm at the point in my life where like I can now spot, you know, certain personality types, and I'm just like, nope, not talking to this guy. Nope. Doesn't, I mean, I would think that I'm like nice to probably 95% of people.
I've never seen you be a dick.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
because I've definitely had my moments, but I think that you know, there just comes a time and place where it's like, you know what? I don't need any more of this nonsense around me, you know. So I've learned how to spot that more, and it's really helped out my life, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean it's good to separate yourself from that stuff, because it's not good.
No, it's not, man. And so many people, you know, are rooting for me and then not rooting for me. You just never know, man. It's just,
I'm always rooting for you.
I'm always rooting for you, dude.
Oh, and thanks.
Yeah, and we got a lot. God, we got so many stories that.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. So many.
Yeah, you've known me for a while now. You know, you've known me with all sorts of weird personality types in my bands that I've been in. But that's what I'm saying, is like, I know how to recognize it now.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, no more. You know,
yeah, you don't,
I'm
you don't
almost 40. I don't need that. I don't need any of that.
I have worked, you know, I moved to LA 11 years ago, 10 or 11 years ago. And, you know, I was kind of still in the dance music world and kind of had people around me that were kind of, you know, living life to a bit of excess.
Right.
You know, which is not how I've really ever lived my life. You know, and then you discover when you're around these people, when you're not just seeing these people like at an event or something, when you're hanging out with them in real life, it's like, okay, this is not how, you're just like this all the time. And like, that's not what I want to surround myself with. And I worked really hard the last like 4 years just to like really cut out those kind of people out of my life.
Right.
And be like, I just, because LA is full of a lot of great people.
Right. It really is. Like, people can, you know, see the worst in Los Angeles, but I also think that if you just have like, even like a handful of people that are in your life, you know, that are in LA, it could be a wonderful experience.
No, it's a great place.
Yeah.
But it's whatever you make of it.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
And so, yeah, I have worked really hard just to surround myself with people that like, I like, that are positive, and that we like pump each other up, and we don't, you know, we're not like trying to cut each other. I mean, we'll fucking fuck around and like make fun of each other and stuff, but it's not like, you know, no one is trying to be toxic.
Right. It's lighthearted.
Or trying to use somebody as a stepping stone.
Right.
You know, we don't do that. And that reflects to like the bands that I work with now, the people that I hire to work for those bands.
Yeah.
You know, it goes all the way down the line, because it's just like, life's too short, man. You can't surround yourself with those people.
I know, man. Well, we don't have too much time left, but what I was going to ask you, I mean, like what's next for you? What's next for some of the bands that you're working with? I mean, tell me a little bit about like some of the bands you oversee with your touring directing stuff. Cause.
So it's interesting. So with the Midnight, you know, we had that record that came out. And then we did another record an EP for Amazon that's now in wide release and all the other DSPs.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a whole tour booked around it, and we just kept kicking it down the line because we didn't know when this COVID thing is going to end.
Right.
So that tour is going to go on in November. Starts at outside.
It's coming up.
Coming up. Yep. Starts at Outside Lands.
Okay.
And then we do like the headline run. It's going to be great. You know, for Tenacious D.
I'd love to go if I'm able to be in town.
Yeah.
Tenacious D, does Connor work for you guys? Connor Montgomery, you know him?
Yeah, I know Connor.
Yeah, I gave him one of his first drum teching jobs.
For the Vandals?
No.
He worked for you?
He worked for Somerset. And then I remember with my last band, I posted something on Facebook being like, hey, if anybody knows of drum tech, you know, let me know. I'm just looking for somebody. And the Somerset came up to me like, dude, you got to take out Connor, man. You gotta give him a shot. And then from there, he went on to work for like fucking Bad Religion and then Avenged Sevenfold and... You know, I think, didn't he do stuff with, like, Bieber? He's, like, doing, like, works with Styx Taylor. Yeah, he works for everybody now, man.
I hit him up.
Love Connor, by the way.
Oh, he's awesome. He's so awesome. He's just, like, not available.
Right.
Like,
yeah, because he's that great.
So when we started the last D cycle, and we don't, you know, that band doesn't tour a ton. You know,
okay.
It's not like a Road Dog thing. It's like, you know, we go out.
Tenacious D, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We go out, you know, couple weeks at a time,
mm-hmm.
a few times a year.
That's so great.
You know, it's great. And those dudes are awesome and super lovely. Everybody in that camp is the best. But yeah, he just wasn't available. Because he's just like, he was with like 5 Seconds to Summer.
Yeah, that makes sense. He's I saw him on tour, like just I went and visited him. I didn't go to the show, but we had some coffee in Salt Lake.
Aiming for those guys. So I think we'll have some stuff next year, probably.
Cool.
And then I work with a DJ called Kill the Noise.
Mm-hmm.
And Jake's awesome. I've known him forever since he's one of the first dudes I became friends with when I got into dance music. And he's just like an old school. He doesn't need anybody with him. I just help him like make sure the shows are running smooth and, you know, he has what he needs for the gigs. But that's just started back up this month.
Wow. I've only seen Tenacious D one time. It was at the Cal Jam thing that Dave Grohl puts on.
Oh, yeah.
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 I don't know if you were there.
I was out of town for that, but
God. So great. I actually didn't know you worked for Tenacious D at all. I mean,
oh, you didn't know that?
Yeah. So one of our crew guys, I won't mention his name just because, but he has a son that's like very, very sick. Mm-hmm. And like a good friend of mine, Christian Jacobs, he contacted Jack Black,
mm-hmm.
and Jack went and visited my friend's kid in Vegas, and they hung out like the whole day, and it was like one of his wishes, you know, to like meet Jack Black, and he just spent the whole time with them, and I think that's really commendable, man, you know.
Yeah, that dude's that dude's like the nicest person in the world.
I heard he's like super down to earth.
He's like one of the nicest people I've ever worked for in my entire life. That whole everybody in that band is amazing.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someday maybe I'll get to meet Mr. Black someday, you know? But yeah, we'll see. Our crowds might what am I even saying? So, well, if you have any advice for anybody, we have a couple minutes left, but I was gonna say if you have any advice for people that want to get into music, I mean, like what would you tell them?
Don't.
Just don't do it.
I mean, I do this because I can't do anything else.
Right, and same here.
And if you can do something else, go do that. I mean, this job, seriously, I don't mean that in a bad way.
No,
I mean,
it's so stressful, dude.
This job is a calling. You have to really like to do it, you know?
Yeah. It's like you put up with like 23 hours of bullshit just so you can do the hour of the thing you love, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, you get addicted to this dopamine kick that happens where it's like you load into the venue, you have your day, you get your production built,
right?
You know, you do your sound check, you do the meet and greet, you get the doors open, you do all this crap. And then like for that 90 minutes, you know, there is that dopamine hit of like, man, I just built this thing all day. All these people get to come hang out with us and like forget about their jobs. And, you know, they have a sitter for their kids that night, or this is their favorite band.
It's their night out, yeah.
It's their night out, and they get to hang out with you.
Right.
And so you get that, you get addicted to that dopamine kick in your head of that happening every night.
Yeah.
You know, from the crew side or the band side.
Yeah, and I can't wait to be back at it. And I think by the time this airs, I'll be just getting back out there full time, because I've just been doing weekend stuff. But well, how can people get a hold of you? How can people find you? You know,
oh God, I don't know. I mean, I have a company called Automaton Industries,
okay.
And that is the company that bands and DJs hire to help them tour direct, run their tours. Same with management companies, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
My Instagram is Black Metal Disco, where
I love that.
I just draw pictures of people in black metal makeup and put them on that.
Can you do that for me?
I'll do it for you.
Okay, cool.
I'll do it for you this week.
Juliana Theory has a shirt that says Top of the World. It was like their big like song, you know.
Yeah.
And it's in black metal writing.
My old 33 opened for the Juliana Theory,
really?
At the Meow Meow in Portland.
Oh my God. I haven't been there yet.
The Meow Meow?
Yeah. It closed, right?
Like, no, it was like the little tiny place where you had to load up the stairs.
Still haven't been there.
It was like, it's gone, but yeah. It was
Maybe did it turn into something else, like the Paris Theater? Is it the same thing?
No, it's like a yakitori place something.
All right. Well, dude, Chris, God, I can't believe that went by so fast for me anyway. But
it was
dude,
a very meandering conversation. Yes. Hope you can edit something cool.
Yeah, no, I definitely will. Or I might not. Who knows? We'll see. But anyway, thank you for coming down here to Idobe. And, you know, we'll have to hang out more, you know, and stick around for Gone Fishkin. And thanks again for tuning in to Ryan Seaman and Friends, and we will see you next time. Thanks.